Teresa Tomeo. A lot of your favorites. I might even be there too.
Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
My guest in this hour on Church and Culture is Michael Hitchborn. Michael's been on Church and Culture before. He was on a year ago or so as the director of the Defend the Faith Project at American Life League. But since then, Michael has founded a new organization called Lepanto Institute. We're going to be talking about what he does with Lepanto Institute. So he now serves as president of that organization. He's a well-known figure in the pro-life movement. He's just done magnificent research and reporting over the years on various Catholic institutions and some of the problems of faithfulness or lack of faithfulness in these institutions. He lives in Virginia with his wife, Alyssa, and their six kids, one of whom is a newborn. Michael, welcome to Church and Culture.
Thanks, Gil. Good to talk to you.
What is the basic mission of the Lepanto Institute?
Well, basically, we set up the organization to look into organizations that call themselves Catholic or Christian and to determine whether they are actually adhering to the precepts laid out by our Lord. And if they're not, then we follow actually the explanation given to us in the book of Matthew. First, go to your brother and let him know that he's doing something wrong. Then, if that doesn't work, you take a couple of people with you and explain it to him. And if that doesn't work, you take it to the church. And if that doesn't work, you go to the faithful. And that's what we do. We try to correct various problems that are going on inside the church. And we do that with the most sincere sense of charity, both towards the church, towards the individual, and also as a help to our bishops.
Michael, I've been with you through some of these battles, specifically the one with the Catholic Campaign for Human Development, and that process you just mentioned of going first to the people involved and so forth. You went through all those steps in that battle.
Yep.
And basically, what was that battle about?
Well, with the Catholic Campaign for Human Development, what we had discovered is that the CCHD had granted a large amount of money to organizations that were themselves promoting abortion, contraception, homosexuality, and Marxism. And, you know, as we were finding some of these things out, I was working at American Life League at the time. And so our focus was primarily on, you know, life issues like abortion and contraception. So when we saw that a Catholic agency was funding organizations that were promoting these things that go against the church, I naively thought that, you know, if I go to these individuals, they'll be shocked and horrified. I really, truly believed that they would look at that and say, wow, I can't believe that we gave money to these people. I'm so sorry. Unfortunately, that wasn't the reaction. I got every excuse imaginable as to why it's okay for them to give them money, and I was absolutely shocked. So then I met you, and you helped me in a lot of ways to find a way of developing a strategy and to figuring out how best to resolve this issue. And as a result, I wound up meeting with several bishops. And ultimately, the bishops that saw the information that I had presented, they were very shocked and horrified, and it led to an actual review of the Catholic Campaign for Human Development. Not that anything really got fixed, but it was certainly a step in the right direction.
It certainly was, and I was privy to some of the step-by-step that you went through in that process, and I think it was a learning curve for all of us. But now you've taken that, what you learned there, and you put it into the creation of the Lepanto Institute, where you're doing much of the same thing, except now you have the platform from which to focus all your energies and all your resources on that those issues. And by the way, let me give the URL out to our listeners. It's www.lepantoinstitute.org. And, of course, Lepanto is the name of the famous sea battle in the 16th century in the Western Mediterranean that defeated Islam, the militant Islam. And but reason I'm having you on the show today, Michael, is you've done some very interesting research. It's not the first research you've done on the Catholic Relief Services, but you've updated your research into the voting, the political donations and the social media communications of employees with Catholic Relief Services. Tell us what you found.
Sure. Most recently, what I reported is that there was a Catholic Relief Services employee who, on her own Facebook page, was posting things like, "I stand with Planned Parenthood," and that she was horrified that the state government of Wisconsin would actually legislate or pass legislation that would ban Planned Parenthood from funding. She was very upset about that. And what was even more upsetting was that as she was posting these things on her Facebook page, there were other employees of Catholic Relief Services that were supporting her in those statements. They were liking her comments and that kind of thing. And so when I started looking into certain other employees at CRS to see, well, what else are they doing and what are these people promoting and supporting, it's not shocking to find that there's definitely a pattern. I mean, for one thing, these people come from organizations like Population Services International and CARE International, which are notorious for promoting abortion and contraception. Population Services International is basically an international aid agency that follows the model of Planned Parenthood. Its whole purpose is population control. It was founded by a pornographer. So the idea that CRS would hire people from that organization is disturbing in and of itself. But then when we see that these individuals then are promoting Planned Parenthood and same-sex marriage on their social media, it shouldn't come so much as a shock, but it always is. You know, it's always a surprise when you see a Catholic agency who very much boasts of the excellence of its staff, and when the staff are supporting things like this, it's horrifying.
Do you think this is fair game? In other words, is it fair game for you to be going on social media and tracking down these kinds of comments and likes and so forth? Is this, some people might find that that's a bit over the top. What do you say to that?
I think that any Catholic agency that is going to be going into the field and doing the work of the church, or at least claiming to do the work of the church, has to have people of excellence to do it. And that means at a bare minimum that they have to adhere to church teaching. I mean, the primary purpose of any agency of the Catholic Church is to evangelize. But there's absolutely no way that somebody who supports Planned Parenthood is going to be evangelizing. That's just not going to happen. And even if they claim that they are, what they're evangelizing to is not going to be Catholic. So I think that absolutely going in and looking at what the employees of Catholic Relief Services is doing is absolutely fair game, not only fair game, but necessary. And when you start to find a pattern among the employees, it then starts to explain certain other things, like why so many documents that were produced by Catholic Relief Services actually promoted condom use. Or why I consistently find programs being implemented by CRS that promote contraception. So it's all interconnected. And as they said, personnel is policy. And when you start to find these kinds of patterns and you see that the policy is starting to reflect the personnel, it all makes sense.
Well, what process have you gone through in taking this information and setting it before CRS?
I have met with CRS's top brass. I met with Archbishop Coakley.
Who are the top brass at CRS?
Well, the top brass, Carolyn Wu Dr. Carolyn Wu. She is the president of Catholic Relief Services. Sean Callahan and Joan Rosenhauer are both senior executive vice presidents of Catholic Relief Services. So I met with those three individually in a private meeting, and I gave them every last bit of information that I had dug up to that point.
And this is the first thing you did?
That was the first thing that I did before I published any major reports on CRS, yeah.
And what was the reaction to that meeting? How did that meeting go?
It was cordial, but I can say that throughout the course of conversation, it was pretty clear that they either were not hearing what I was saying or did not ascribe to my interpretation of the information.
What interpretation was needed? I mean,
that's kind of the point. When I was pointing out that CRS was funding organizations that were themselves performing abortions and distributing contraception, the response that I got was, well, do you shop at Walmart? Because if you shop at Walmart, then that means that when you purchase something, you're supporting their industry, which sells condoms and contraception. And my response to that was, if you have a choice as to whom you give money, then it's not a matter of shopping at a particular store and maybe buying one thing at one store and one thing at another store. You're actually willfully asking an organization that goes out and performs abortions and sterilizations to join you in a partnership. And when that partnership means that you're on the ground helping people, you are introducing those people to an organization that is itself going to ruin their souls. And you're helping those people trust that organization.
Now, is this basically what you said in response to that?
That is.
And what was their reaction?
Well, the reaction was that they said, well, it's necessary for us to work with these organizations in order to do development and aid work. But that's not true, because there's an organization called Caritas in Veritate International. And that organization, its baseline is basically, meaning financially, its baseline is very close to Catholic Relief Services. Another one is Cross Catholic Outreach, whose baseline is very close to Catholic Relief Services financially. The difference is they're not taking two-thirds of their whole entire annual budget from the federal government. And Catholic Relief Services, and that's really the problem, if Catholic Relief Services wants money from the government, they have to play with other organizations that are doing terrible things. That's what they mean by necessary.
But is that the case, too? I mean, does the federal money come with those kinds of strings attached that they're required to work with certain other organizations? Why can't they work with Caritas?
Well, I don't know why they don't work with Caritas. That's a very good question. It would seem that if they're doing international development and aid work, that one of the first things they would do is get in touch with Cross Catholic Outreach or Caritas and work with them in order to implement these programs. But instead, you see them partnering up with Population Services International, Care International, and the Futures Group, and several other organizations. And, what it boils down to is that these organizations, well, for one thing, Cross Catholic Outreach and Caritas don't accept government money. And so because of that, they're not going to be listed as partners. They're not going to be participating in this program. So that's actually one reason. But
now, were any of these folks that you tracked on their social media, were they any of them in high-level positions at Catholic Relief Services?
I have tracked individuals in high-level positions on social media. In fact, I found an individual named Rick Estridge last year. He was a vice president in Catholic Relief Services, and when I saw all over his Facebook page all these statements in support of same-sex marriage, I dug a little bit deeper and found out that he was actually himself in a same-sex marriage. I was able to obtain a copy of the marriage license or marriage certificate, and I presented that to Catholic Relief Services. And after some deliberation and very loud complaints from the organization, they parted ways with him. My understanding is that they paid him a severance of some kind, and he willfully stepped down. I can't prove that, but that's the information that I've gotten from some contacts that I have in the organization.
So he actually did step down?
Yes, he did.
That's interesting. Now, do you also track political contributions at CRS?
I have recently started to track that. It wasn't something that I set out to do, but as I was doing some research on some other individuals, I found that, well, for instance, the lady that was posting stuff in favor of Planned Parenthood, she gave contributions to Barack Obama in 2012. Before that, I found that one of the individuals whose name appeared on several CRS condom-promoting documents gave several donations to Bernie Sanders and the Sanders campaign. And then as I started looking at, you know, some of these other contributions, I thought, well, how many CRS records are there for political contributions from their employees, or how many public records are there for CRS employees? And as I was digging, I found approximately 54 CRS employees making political contributions in the public records. And of those 54, there were a total of 198 contributions. 98% of those contributions went to pro-abortion candidates.
Now, Michael Hitchborn, that didn't surprise you, did it?
No. No, it didn't surprise me at all. But it's interesting when you think about it demographically. Any demographer will tell you that when you're looking for a wide array of diverse opinions in any area, you're trying to figure out, okay, statistically, how likely is it that we're going to have a vast majority of opinion in one way or another? I actually searched just for the word Catholic among employers on these contribution sites. And you find a vast array of diverse opinions. If you're searching for employers or people who work for Catholic institutions, you'll see that it's maybe about 60-40, maybe 55-45, one way or the other, whether it comes to promotion of Democrats or Republicans, pro-abortion candidates, pro-life candidates. There's a wide diversity. But not at CRS. It's fascinating that it is so almost exclusively in favor of pro-abortion candidates. And the ones that I found in favor of pro-life candidates are actually quite old.
Do you think that, again, I'll ask you the same question about political contributions as I did about social media. Do you think it's fair to track that?
Absolutely. And the thing is, it's one of those things where the bishops really need to have as much information as they possibly can, because every time I present them information on programs that is being implemented by CRS, the first thing that the bishops tend to do is go to the CRS staff and ask them, are you doing terrible things? And the CRS staff says, why goodness, no. And so then the bishops turn around and say, we asked our staff, and our staff says we're not doing anything wrong. But if you start looking into the staff and seeing whether they are trustworthy or not, when you have such a strong, one-sided approach to their political contributions, you get an insight into what kind of mindset they have.
Or what the culture is like, right?
Exactly. And anytime you have a series of people who call themselves Catholic that think that it's okay to promote or support candidates who are pro-abortion, but they would say, well, I'm not supporting him because he's pro-abortion. I'm supporting him because I like his policy on road maintenance, and I like his immigration policy, but I'm not doing it because he's pro-abortion. Those same people are the ones who say, it's okay for me, for CRS, to fund these organizations that are performing abortions and distributing contraception, but we're not supporting them for those reasons. We're supporting them because they're helping us build waterways. And that's the division that they have mentally that allows them to, at least in their own philosophical mindset, make that distinction. If they can do it politically, they can do it in the workspace, and we're seeing it play out.
So what you've really uncovered is a dominant culture inside of Catholic Relief Services.
Without a doubt, yep.
And, I mean, how can they deny that this exists, given all this evidence that you've compiled?
Well, they really can't. In fact, Archbishop Coakley has recently been responding to people inquiring.
Now, let's remind our listeners that he is the chairman of the board of
the chairman of the board. Yeah.
And he's out of what diocese?
He's in Oklahoma City.
Okay.
And so when it was discovered that one of the CRS employees was promoting Planned Parenthood, some of our readers took it upon themselves to contact Archbishop Coakley and to ask him, you know, why is an employee of Catholic Relief Services, in fact, why are four employees of Catholic Relief Services making statements in favor of Planned Parenthood? And his response was to say that he was very saddened that he found out that there was an employee who was promoting Planned Parenthood, but they were going to take the opportunity to enact more training programs to help employees understand the very distinct Catholic character of Catholic Relief Services.
What would you have rather him said?
Well, I think that the individual should have been removed from her post.
Well, don't you want to give somebody a chance to, you know, repent?
Perhaps, but when somebody like that is in a policy position, she shouldn't be there.
You could call them in and say, what's going on here, and have a conversation, and I don't know. I mean, it seems to me that to just fire somebody on the spot is maybe a bit too harsh. I don't know, but I've been in situations where I have called for the same thing you call for, and it really backfired. And I would, in the sense that, you know, When I took a step back from what I myself said, I realized that if I were the boss, I would have an intermediate step myself.
Right. I'm not necessarily calling for her to be fired, but when I say removed from a position, I mean taken from out of the field and brought back and evaluated.
Well, as the bishop said, do some education, but it seems to me that what the bishop is not saying is, I'm going to look into this. This concerns me greatly. This tells me something about, he could even use the phrase culture of the organization or whatever.
Sure.
And that we need to, you know, look deeply into this. I'll get back to you about it.
Very true.
But this is not what he's saying.
No. And what's more to the point, I would actually point out that CRS has boasted for the last 5 years that they have implemented several training programs to make absolutely sure that they have a proper vetting process and that their employees are well educated in the Catholic mark of the organization and how important it is to follow the tenets of the faith. It's had this program in place for the last 5 years. I don't see that continued education programs is really going to be the answer.
No, I mean, didn't the former director or president of CRS become ambassador to the Vatican?
Ken Hackett, yes. He was the former president of CRS.
And all of this was going on under Ken Hackett, too, correct?
Oh, you bet. Absolutely.
So it seems like if you get rewarded by being appointed ambassador to the Vatican, that kind of outweighs what Mike Hitchborn or any other critic might have to say about it.
To some extent, I would say, yeah.
I mean, that's a real-world observation I'm making. In other words, for the President of the United States to have affirmed Catholic Relief Services in the way it did through the appointment of Hackett to ambassador for the Vatican, is about as high a praise as you can lay on an organization, at least from the federal point of view. But they are a Catholic organization, but as you said, most of their money comes from the government. So are they really a Catholic organization, Michael?
I don't think so. For one thing, a couple of years ago, one of their vice presidents, Bill O'Keefe, went on the record and said that they were very, very proud that Catholic Relief Services didn't evangelize. You know, you'd asked me earlier about one of the meetings that I'd had with CRS Brass. And I'll never forget talking to Sean Callahan, because I mentioned specifically that the primacy of the church, the primary mission of the church, is to make converts, to go into the world and bring people into the church, bring people to Christ. And his response absolutely floored me. He equated that with bribing the poor. He said that, you know, we have to make a distinction. CRS doesn't go out and evangelize. There are other groups that do that. What we do is just provide aid and assistance to individuals. And I responded to him. I said, well, you realize that when Jesus multiplied the loaves and fishes, he didn't just say, here, have food and feed your bellies. He preached to them. He used feeding them as a means to get them together so that he could then bring to them the fullness of the truth. And when they came back the next day to try and make him a bread king, they wanted more food.
Michael Hitchborn, you should really video these meetings you have with the Brass from CRS. I'm talking with Michael Hitchborn, founder and president of the Lepanto Institute. It is an organization Michael founded to continue his work that he started with the American Life League in looking into the Catholicity of well-known Catholic organizations, particularly those who provide social services and who provide help to those in need around the world, the poor, the sick, the infirmed. So we'll be back with Michael Hitchborn and talk more about his research after this short break.
The Church's teaching on the theology of the body is needed now more than ever, and the International Theology of the Body Congress will show you how TOB can solve the challenges facing families today. Join Al Cresta, the Theology of the Body Institute, Catholic leaders, experts, and enthusiasts for love, mercy, and the gift of the family, September 23rd through the 25th at the Ontario Convention Center in Southern California. Find out more at tobcongress.com. Early bird registration ends July 31st, so register today at tobcongress.com.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I am Father Thomas Loya. This week on Ave Maria, two major feast days converge this week, and they convey for us the true nature of our lives as human beings. An old but young friend will join us and give testimony to the process of divinization.
Saturday evenings at 8:30 and Sunday mornings at 9 on 990 WDEO Ave Maria Radio.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchuk.
We all need friends, but sometimes instead of being a blessing, our friendships can make our lives harder. How do you recognize a toxic friendship? Our faith tells us that godly relationships are characterized by mutual self-donation. In other words, a healthy friendship is one where two people commit to being a blessing to each other. But sometimes our friendships lack that reciprocity. The toxic friend places all sorts of demands on our time and emotional resources, but is never available when we need them in return. The second sign of a toxic friendship is that despite that lack of reciprocity, we feel trapped, like we can't set boundaries even when we want to. If that sounds familiar, get some perspective by discussing your concerns with one of your healthier friends. Then set boundaries. You'll feel healthier, and the limits you establish might begin to heal that toxic relationship as well. I'm Dr. Greg Popchuk, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
I'm back with Michael Hitchborn, who is founder and president of the Lepanto Institute, where he's continuing the research, writing, and publication that he did at American Life League on Catholic organizations that, frankly, haven't got a very strong, if any, Catholic identity. Michael, in the time I've known you, and you've researched not just Catholic Relief Services, but a variety of other organizations of a similar type, and in the case of the Catholic Campaign for Human Development, you constantly encounter the argument that, well, we can partner with or we can be in coalition with other organizations that promote abortion or promote same-sex marriage and contraception because it helps us to do our job and we are not in any way, how shall I put it, responsible or share the moral responsibility for what those organizations espouse. Is that a good restatement of the argument?
Just by partnering up with organizations, if they're focused on one particular issue, then they're not de facto endorsing every other thing that organization does, even if they're dues-paying members, which is kind of ridiculous, but that's what they think.
Well, how, I mean, let's get into the weeds on how this exactly works, okay?
Sure.
Give an example of the kind of coalition or partnerships that you discovered with Catholic Campaign for Human Development. And it's about money. It's about giving Catholic money to organizations whose very mission statements and programs explicitly promote things that are opposed to the church's moral teaching. Can you give it some specific examples so our listeners will understand?
Sure. So with the Catholic Campaign for Human Development, there are two ways to determine whether an organization is fit for Catholic money, and that's, in one sense, it depends on what the organization itself is doing. One example that I can think of right off the top of my head is an organization that I exposed a few years ago called L.A. Congress, or it called itself L.A. CAN. And L.A. CAN was going around and actually helping to open teen clinics or to sponsor these teen clinics where they were exposing teens to contraception and condoms and promoting contraception and condoms through these programs. So that would be a direct violation. That organization is itself doing something in violation of Catholic teaching, and according to CCHD guidelines, that organization should immediately lose its funding. That rarely ever happens. But the other way that we find the problems with some of these organizations is through coalitions. Coalitions such as... Well, there are networks like the Gamaliel Foundation, which has local affiliates all over the country. So when we find problems with the national organization of Gamaliel, then that trickles down to the local affiliates. So it's like if National Planned Parenthood has a policy in place, then all of its local affiliates, being branches of the main entity, will also be implementing those policies. And so with Gamaliel, it's something similar. You know, when the national organization is doing something wrong, then the local affiliate, which is the one getting the CCHD funding, is a participant in that. And so we will then investigate the national entity and say, local entity, you either disaffiliate or you are guilty by participation. You're participating in this entity. Most of them are paying dues, which means that if a CCHD grantee is receiving Catholic funds, that money then trickles to the coalition or the national entity that it's part of.
And that money can be confidently said to support the act of providing abortions or contraception, correct?
Absolutely. I'll give you another example with Catholic Relief Services. CRS is a member of something called Medicam. Medicam is it's a coalition network type organization in Cambodia, and you know, a lot of different aid and development works and medical organizations are a member of Medicam, but Medicam has a policy on record. I mean, its stated policy is in part to go around the country, educate young women about the fact that abortion is legal, where they can get abortions, and even to train abortion providers on how to provide an abortion. And what Medicam is it's a dues-paying organization, so if you're a member of Medicam, you're paying dues into it. CRS, being a very large member of Medicam, is paying about $3,000 a year to Medicam to be a member.
I just find this unconscionable. I mean, why would a Catholic organization that's fully funded by Catholic money, money given to the bishops for the express service purpose of human development, that they would allow this to happen?
Well, it's partially ideology. I think that anybody that can make a mental distinction between helping an organization just because of one little aspect of what they do and divorce the other element, which is to provide abortion and contraception. They think that they can actually divorce those two elements. But, you know, everyone in economics will tell you that fungibility applies all across the board. So if you're paying money into an entity that is providing abortion, you are then going to be paying for those abortions. It's just the nature of money.
And yeah, I know you've had extensive conversation with a variety of bishops and variety of officials at the Bishops' Conference and specifically at CCHD. And what kind of response have you gotten on this issue?
When I meet with bishops one-on-one, the vast majority of the time, the bishops look at the information with absolute shock. They express that they are upset by what I'm showing them, and they talk about how they want to try and fix things, but I think most of them don't know what to do. The good bishops especially, when they're confronted with this kind of thing, tend to ask me, what should we do about this? And my general response is, Your Excellency, I approached you with this information because you're the one with authority. I'm a nobody. I mean, I'm just finding the information, but you're the one who can actually do something about it. But the climate of collegiality at the USCCB, this idea that once the USCCB makes a decision to go in a particular direction, all bishops across the board are supposed to be participating in it, I think is paralyzing a lot of these bishops. They get kind of stuck between being collegial and actually doing something to fix the problem. With CCHD, it was easy for a lot of them. They just decided, well, we're not going to participate in CCHD anymore, and they didn't. With CRS, it's a lot more difficult, and I don't know exactly why. Maybe it's because CRS has always had a more stellar reputation, and CCHD has always been kind of seedy, even from the beginning. I really don't know why they don't have the same kind of inclination or determination to do something from a diocesan level about CRS that they did with CCHD. I really don't know.
And so do you think that since your like 1 or 2 year struggle with CCHD, do you think anything has substantially changed there since you did that?
There have been some interesting changes. I know that there have been some personnel changes for a positive development. John Carr, who was long the head of the Department for Justice and Peace at the USCCB, he's a dyed-in-the-wool leftist.
Before he's also a nice, amiable man. So I mean,
he's a nice person. He's a
person. We disagree, but mm-hmm. He's a gentleman. You know.
But you know he's now gone,
He retired. He's now teaching at Georgetown, I think, or Catholic U. I forget which one.
At Georgetown, I believe. I believe he's at Georgetown. But you know, he's no longer there. He's not in charge of CCHD anymore. And I actually happen to know the person who is there now, and he's a very good man. I know that he's trying very hard to keep CCHD in line with policies, even though it doesn't always work. And I'm still finding problems with CCHD grantees.
It's very hard to change the culture of an institution in a short period of time.
I agree.
But I think you did them a great service and the church a great service in kind of pushing in the right direction.
Yes, it's, you know, the problem is CCHD is kind of a microcosm of the vast problem that's going on with the whole social justice movement in the church anyway. Because when you look at what the mission of the church is, the mission of the church is to bring souls to Christ. I mean, that's why the church exists. But CCHD, Catholic Relief Services, Catholic Charities, all the way through the other aid and development agencies of the Catholic Church in other countries, like CAFOD and CIDSE and Secours Catholique in France. All of those agencies are under the umbrella of something called Caritas Internationalis, not to be confused with the Caritas I brought up earlier. It's not the same group. But Caritas Internationalis is on the International Council, the governing body of an international communist organization called the World Social Forum. And when you have the overarching umbrella group that is involved in a communist group, I mean, I have pictures. They're marching through the streets with hammer and sickle flags. So Caritas is on the governing body of that entity. When that is happening, then the more local organizations are going to follow in the same culture. And I really think that it starts all the way at the top.
Well, when you start talking about communism and so forth, it's hard to imagine communism outside of Cuba, China, or Soviet Union or having much influence. Does it have influence outside those countries?
Absolutely. And when I say communism, I'm talking red flag, hammer and sickle.
Like what countries do communists march and have any substantial influence?
I would say almost all of them. It's a worldwide movement. And even though they may not be in political power, they're certainly in positions of power when it comes to social justice and local agitation groups.
What about in this country?
In this country, you bet. There's an organization called the U.S. Social Forum in the United States, and it's large. It's very large.
And this is a communist front group?
Absolutely, without a doubt. It was created by communist parties in Bolivia, the World Social Forum was, and its local groups, the U.S. Social Forum, the Canadian Social Forum, the Africa Social Forum, all of those local branches are part of the International World Social Forum. And they say right on the page that they were formed by the Fourth Internationale and the Socialist Party of Brazil and various other communist organizations, and when you look at what they're doing and what they say that they want to do, it's not a surprise that we have socialist agitation groups like Black Lives Matter marching through the streets and causing all kinds of problems, riots, uprisings, killings, National People's Action. They're out there agitating and trying to stir social unrest in the area throughout the United States, and there are various others, but you know they're all a part of this international movement, the World Social Forum. CCHD grantees are a part of these
Do any Catholic organizations participate directly in the World Social Forum?
You bet. Caritas Internationalis has participated. Catholic Relief Services has participated. Pax Christi International has participated. Religious orders, such as the Sisters of Notre Dame de Namur, have participated. Absolutely. There are a lot of Catholic organizations that are involved with the World Social Forum movement.
Is this something that our friend George Soros is behind? Is he part of one of the funders of it?
You know, I actually haven't been able to make a direct connection from him to the World Social Forum, but he is involved with a lot of the groups that are a part of it.
And the I'm looking now at the World Social Forum website, and it certainly looks to me to, without saying communist, it certainly sounds like it. I must agree with you on that. I was very interested to see the report of a few days ago that the liberation theology that sprung up in Central and South America in the 70s was planted there by KGB.
Yes. The KGB worked in Romania specifically because Romania has a Latin language. And they worked there specifically in order to develop a theological movement that would promote socialism and communism by definition. And they brought that down to Bolivia, Ecuador, Venezuela, and they started the liberation theology movement down there. And what's interesting is that the Catholic University of Brazil was one of the founding members of the World Social Forum, and the Catholic University of Brazil is well known as kind of a hotbed of liberation theology.
Did you know anything about this KGB liberation theology connection before I saw it in the news a few days ago?
Yes, I knew about it last year. I actually gave a presentation last year on the question, has the Catholic Church been infiltrated by Marxist socialism or communism? And what I went through when I was giving my presentation was that was actually one of the proofs that I gave, was that the liberation theology movement was started by this individual in order to infiltrate the Catholic Church. And what's very interesting is that when you start studying the way communism works and the way it's cropped up, Lenin and Stalin both started the idea of front groups, where they would have an organization that was not officially connected with communism or the Communist Party, but would be used to spread a communist message.
That's what they did in Germany that led to a revolution in 1919.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so what we have, I then also gave quotes from people who testified to the U.S. Committee on House Committee on Un-American Activities. And in these testimonies, they said, you know, these front groups were started not just to infiltrate in American localities, you know, like schools or libraries and that kind of thing, but specifically to infiltrate the church. And then when you trace how these front groups kind of sprung up in the 1940s specifically and then really kind of exploded in the 50s and 60s, it's very interesting that Saul Alinsky, who is the father of modern community organizing, he got his start by agitating for communist organizations. He actually used to raise money for the Communist Party in Spain, for the Communist Revolution in Spain. And he then disaffiliated with communism and started working with the Catholic Church in Chicago. And through that relationship, the Catholic Campaign for Human Development was formed. And it was started specifically to fund Saul Alinsky's community organizing groups.
Michael, you need to write a book that traces all of this and do the research that fills in the gaps in the story, because I think what you're piecing together with the World Social Forum sort of at the hub of it all, is extremely important to the Catholic Church, and especially to the laity, who are rather innocent about all these things, innocent in the sense that they just don't know.
I'd love to write a book. I'll tell you what, I'll write the book if you'll co-author it with me.
I'll definitely help. I don't know if I can commit to total authoring, but it's certainly something that I think is important enough to be involved in. And you do marvelous research, and you find things that simply are not being reported anywhere else. And again, I'll tell our listeners that Michael Hitchborn is founder and president of the Lepanto Institute, and its website is lepantoinstitute.org, lepantoinstitute.org. And I believe people can go there and sign up for your weekly newsletter. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes. We do put out a weekly newsletter, and, of course, we also send out our latest updates and research when it comes up. So they'll get breaking news as it happens.
Yeah, and your newsletter is quite, I should say, user-friendly, and it's something that you can peruse in 10 or 15 minutes, and it's very, very interesting and well put together. So I think that's something that our listeners will want to look into. They have to go, again, to lepantoinstitute.org to subscribe. Now, what is on your hit list for the rest of the year at Lepanto Institute?
Well, I don't want to give it away, but I will say that I have a couple of requests in at the Freedom of Information Act office, and once that information comes in, I think that we are going to be able to prove without a doubt that there is definitely contraception distribution going on from Catholic Relief Services. So stay tuned for.
As an organization, their employees,
yes,
are actually handing them out.
Yes.
And so this is something. And your Freedom of Information Act request is usually something that is related to government papers. Is that correct?
That is correct. There are a couple of government agencies that I've contacted to get the documentation that I'm looking for, and I've already got government documents that have confirmed what I was looking for, but I just wanted to make sure that I had everything.
Well, once you put something out there, it has to be bulletproof or else it'll be ignored, as we both know.
That's right.
And so these are the kind of documents that would be bulletproof in terms of this particular, how do I want to put it? You're charging, that's the word I was looking for, CRS, Catholic Relief Services, with the actual distribution of condoms.
Worse than condoms.
Do they know this is coming?
No.
Okay. Well, maybe one of them will be listening to this program. Do you care that they know it's coming?
It won't help them.
Oh boy! What a gunslinger you are, Michael.
It won't help, because what I've already discovered is damning in and of itself. I was just looking for additional information in order to clarify a couple of things, but what I have in and of itself is already damning.
Well, I would say that our listeners are the first to hear about this, and
yes, they are.
They should be watching for the story to break, and the way to do that is to go to Michael Hitchborn's organizational website, lepantoinstitute.org, and sign up for the newsletter, and you'll be getting this story as soon as it's published. And Michael, I want to thank you for all you've done and for the sacrifices you've made, which I know about. I don't have to share them with our listeners. And for the work you're doing at the newly established Lepanto Institute.
Thank you very much, Deal. I really appreciate it.
Well, we'll have you back regularly on this show, and definitely have you back after this story about Catholic Relief Service breaks. I want to tell our listeners that I'll be back on this day at this time next week, and we'll have another great guest like Michael Hitchborn. Thanks again, Michael.
Thank you, Jeff.
If you have any comments or questions about church and culture, you can contact Deal Hudson at dhudson@avemariaradio.net.
At the Faith and Conscience Matter Conference, Dr. Robert Vestigi asked and answered the question, is it okay for us to play God?
Now, theologically and philosophically, we also say that that organism is alive, and what makes it alive is the soul. Now, the soul is the animating principle. Something which is animated has life. An animal is a living being. So even our language tells us that we could tell the difference between a living being, an animate being, and an inanimate object.
This is Henry Root, your host for Putting on the Mind of Christ. On our next program, Sacred Heart Major Seminary Professor Robert Vestigi helped us look at life and death while also reading from church teachings at the Faith and Conscience Matter Conference. Listen to Is It Okay for Us to Play God on Putting on the Mind of Christ this Sunday afternoon at 3, encoring Saturday afternoons at 6 on 990 WDEO, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Fully Alive. Reflections on the scripture readings of today's Mass with Father Pat Egan, chaplain of Ave Maria Radio.
The lesson of today's gospel is pay attention. Many of us act as if death and judgment are a long way off. Jesus, on the other hand, tells us to be watchful and ready. He said to his disciples, be like servants waiting for their master's return from a wedding, ready to open the door immediately he arrives. Blessed are those servants whom his master finds vigilant. Should he come late and find them prepared in this way, blessed are those servants. Know this, if the owner had known when the thief was coming, he wouldn't have let his house be broken into. So you also must be prepared, for the Son of Man will come at an hour you don't expect. The Son of Man will come at an hour you don't expect. So then Peter said, Lord, is this parable meant for us or for everyone? And the Lord replied, who is the servant whom the master will put in charge to distribute food at the proper time? Blessed is that servant whom the master on arrival finds doing so. But the servant says to himself, my master is delayed, and begins to ill-treat his fellow servants, and to eat, drink, and get drunk, then that servant's master will come unexpectedly and will punish him severely. The servant who knew his master's will and didn't act on it shall be beaten. So I ask you, when did you last think about dying and judgment day? Here's a more modern way of putting this ancient truth. Death is certain, the time and manner are uncertain. I'm Father Pat Egan, chaplain to Ave Maria Radio, commenting on the readings read today at Mass. Remember, inspired by the Word of God, you can be more fully alive.
Bishops in the Catholic Church are heralds of faith, according to the Catholic Catechism. Their first task is to teach and preach the gospel to all men and women. In this, they are endowed with the authority of Christ. Christ, who is truth itself, will to confer on the Church a share in his own infallibility in order that the people of God have true guidance as to his teaching. Christ thus endowed the Church's shepherds with the gift of infallibility when instructing in matters of faith and morals. The Pope enjoys infallibility when he proclaims by a definitive act a doctrine of faith and morals.